We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloween.
Welcome to Halloumé. This is Lore Keepers, the Boundless Venture, the world-renowned podcasting opus, wherein the richest tapestry of lore in human history is sung into being before your very ear holes. I'm Frank.
I'm Carter.
And if you needed any of that information, then what are you doing listening to this episode? We're literally wrapping up a season here. Well, you know what? If you're a brave enough person to make this your first episode, welcome. We've got cookies. There's a seat over there.
They're vegan,
in the corner. For playmat stuff, if you need, if you want to just kind of set your kids down, if you have kids, or if you are a child, you know, go hang out with all the other kids. Also, maybe don't listen to this because we swear a lot and talk about weird shit. I mean, stuff. Shit, because, you've left
last
now.
Last episode, I talked about the dildos. Yeah.
I think most kids probably don't even know what a dildo is.
Yeah.
Depends on the age of the kid. Whether you melt jewelry and volcanoes, burn dildos to usurp the Kyrian throne, or crit on your Grey Warden to kickflip, sit a while by our fire, O weary wanderer, and let us weave you a tale. I don't know why we say that, because it's not really... I mean, I guess, because it's esoteric. No, evocative is the word I was thinking of.
It is also esoteric.
But we're not really ever weaving a tale. I mean, I guess
you
it
liked
depends
it.
On what you,
you
call
liked
a tale.
It. You pushed that.
I did like it. I pushed for it. Anyway, so this week we are continuing to end this current season of Lore Keepers. We have been talking for the better part of a year now at this point about Padasadi, a city on the island of Tencetung. And as we, the beginning of the end was last week. If you remember, or if you weren't here, I guess welcome. If you do remember, then I don't need to tell you. So if you aren't new, but you don't remember, then this is for you. But wait, or if you are new, I don't know, whatever the fuck. You, we were talking about,
ask your doctor,
yeah, how... How did the... Shut up. I'm doing great. How did the city of Padasadi end? What happened to it? And what Carter started us on was the idea of an artifact that the demand for it, the need for it from powerful figures was so great that
they're so thirsty.
It's so fucking thirsty for this staff rod, long pole, long staff, short quarter staff pole rod
of
power wand that somebody either sent it back in time or like literally covered up the city to stop it from, I don't know, getting sent back in time or something like that. I'm not quite clear on that part anymore, actually.
What?
But yeah, basically, city was destroyed by an archmage of some kind. Still doing great.
Godzilla was involved.
Godzilla surfed on a tsunami, which I was going to mention to you means that the earthquake could not have happened on Padasadi. It would have had to happen somewhere else because that's how tsunamis work.
Yes.
But worth noting, and caused the entire island to get destroyed. And I don't know. I mean, I'm all over the place. Anyways, we're in the episode now proper, and we're just going to go for it. The first thing I was going to bring up to you was, if we're looking at it this way, you did mention like the entirety of the Harbor District comes smashing down on the island, right? Like destroys
a
ton of shit. That wouldn't kill everyone, and it wouldn't stop people from rebuilding the city. So I don't know if that's enough. I think like the island itself is getting pulled back into the fucking ocean or some shit like that.
Well, I mean, I think that one, you get the rampant flooding from the tsunami. You got combo that with the Harbor District, you know, getting slam dunked.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the earthquake then causes significant seismic activity to begin with Tenzing, and you know the volcano.
Which the volcano is just called Tenzing. It's the name of the island and the volcano.
Yep, because the volcano is the island and the island is the volcano. They're one. It's like the Trinity in Catholicism.
So yeah.
It's just a duality.
Is Jesus the volcano or the island?
Both. At the same time.
So which is the Holy Spirit?
I think that's both at the same time.
God gave birth to himself. I don't think about that often enough. Yep. That's really weird. That's a really weird conceit. Not like for Christianity. Like, I feel like that's pretty normal in other mythos of like having somebody give birth to themselves just is like shit that happens. Although typically, I don't think...
I'm all about the Egyptian
time travel's version. A new thing. I don't think time travel's a thing that existed. Like, is there any mythos that has time travel beyond time being a cyclical, like things coming back around again? I mean, literally like somebody going back in time.
I'm not sure. I would have to look into
that. Why hadn't anybody thought of that?
Think about it like this. The Egyptian creator god Ra Atum autoflatiated himself to then create the next two gods. Just think about that for a moment.
Yes, but he didn't have to go back in time to do it.
He didn't. You're right. He just had to have a couple of ribs removed.
Kronos was their god of time.
Yeah, not to be confused with Cronus, who was the daddy of Zeus, but the son of... Sky Boy. Oof.
Right.
Who's Sky
Not
Boy?
Not to be confused with Corona, which is a thing that happens the on the sun. Not to be confused with Corona, which is a beer.
Which is also the coronavirus.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, holy shit.
Yeah, that's a thing that exists. Uranus, that's his name. Uranus. That also known as Uranus. He's the god of the sky. Who is the daddy of Cronus? Who banged Gaia a lot? Not Cronus. Cronus was the daughter. Was the son of Gaia. All right. Frank, what are you doing?
I'm looking at time traveling myths. I should stop. Okay. All right. I'm here. I'm present. Hello.
Hello, Frank.
I just figured I'd let you try and vamp for as long as you possibly could on the Greek mythology Cronus shit, because you just do that sometimes.
I do. It's true.
I mean, okay, you know what? No, the 98% of this entire fucking podcast is both of us vamping. Primarily me. Primarily.
I mean, I love talking about me. Heracles and his tasks. Heracles is not a hero. Let me tell you.
No, yeah, I mean, most of the quote-unquote heroes of myth are usually not actually very heroic in their actions. Okay. All right, so really, yeah, we've got an artifact. We have an archmage of some kind, or multiples. And they determined that this thing needs to be stopped. Let me throw some other things into the mix here. Like, okay, so the artifact gets thrown back in time. Is that something that's a direct result of the actions of the destruction of the city?
No, the Archmagos did the destruction to kind of cover up the time travel shenanigans.
Hey, dude. What if Padasari was built on the ruins of Padasari? What if he sent the entire fucking island back in time? To the end of the Bellum Obscura? Or so far forward or back or something like that, that all that's left are like little ruins? And then when people eventually wash ashore, they build
their stuff
on top of it. It's a fucking island out of time.
It's a little bit too much like God fucking himself for me.
I don't know. I think we do a lot of God fucking themselves. I mean, like, all of this is just masturbatory world building anyways. Like, we're just fucking jacking ourselves off into a microphone every fucking week anyways.
Jesus Christ. Why this wouldn't is we not just acknowledge it for episode. What it is?
No, it never was. I mean, dude, what is podcasting but like people just jacking themselves off into microphones? I love the sound of my own voice.
Okay, like maybe Joe Rogan is that, but not all podcasting.
I know. I'm making a joke, but yeah, no. In all sincerity, Joe Rogan is him jacking himself off into a microphone.
Yeah.
Dude, I like that idea a lot, actually.
Joe Rogan?
Joe Rogan's ideas are very appealing. Yes, I am a, you know, white centrist male.
You need to check time travel. Rogan facts. He's not centrist anymore. Yes.
What
me.
Is he?
I think he's going to the right a little bit.
Oh, no, I kind of assumed he was already there. Apparently, one day white men won't be allowed to go outside. Did you hear about that?
I think.
On a recent podcast, he was like, that's where cancel culture goes, man. It just gets, you know, more and more, you know, whatever. And eventually, like, they'll be saying white men won't be allowed to go outside. You'll be stuck inside. And I think his co-host is like, really? You think that's where it's going? He's like, absolutely. No, I'm dead serious right now. Won't be allowed to go outside.
I'm not sure if the weed is good for Joe and it, like, mellows him out. Or if it's
bad. Is he high on every episode?
I think he has to be.
I mean, I think there's, like, what, a weed plant on top of his forehead or whatever is the art?
Yeah.
Is that the whole thing? I guess that's is that the shtick? Is that why when Mr. Musk got on the podcast, he smoked weed with Joe? Is that what the podcast is? The Joe Rogan Experience is doing a podcast with Joe Rogan and getting high while you do a podcast with Joe Rogan, who's also getting high?
I haven't watched any of it because of who I am and because of who Joe Rogan is.
You swap out Joe Rogan with about a million other people who would be hosting the podcast, and that's a great fucking premise. Shit, maybe that's what our premise should be.
Yeah, I mean...
God damn. I don't think people know this, but we are almost never, like, inebriated while we do this. I used to drink sometimes, like, before or during an episode. When I would go back and listen to those episodes, typically... I did not come up with good ideas. I wasn't clear-headed enough. Like, and you have to come up with good ideas to be on this fucking show, man. It's like not necessarily easy. I need to be here. So yeah, no, I haven't. I think I've done this show sober pretty much for like the last 2-3 years.
Oh God,
Carter, I think you do better drinking. Show.
I think I'm just a, you know,
better than me. I don't think that you're better than you are sober. I will say I can tell.
I think I'm just a better man. I think there's a gallon of vodka. Just I transcend.
Fucking hell. Oh shit. Okay. I think it would be really cool if the island. We're like out of time that way. Stuck in its own loop.
I'm willing to give you this rod if you're willing to give me a staff. You gotta
What's the rod that you're willing to give me?
I'll give you the island at a time with Padasati fucking themselves.
Oh, sure.
If you give me the staff.
Wait, why would that be a rod though?
Because it's a euphemism.
Oh, right. God fucking himself. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah, I can be a staff.
All right. Deal.
So when you come up with a cooler thing later, we can't switch it. It has to be a staff.
It has to be a staff.
All right.
But it could be like a 12-foot long staff. We didn't talk about the length.
To be clear, I'm not talking about a situation where like you are your own grandfather. Because everybody, when this goes back in time, everybody's fucking dead. Like, there's no way that anything survives. I'm not saying it's literally, like, a self-cestuous cycle, because it's, like, over 1,000 years. Even if you're an elf, you're gonna die in that time, and it's not like you're having sex with your child or something, or
Can we not have sex with, like, our children, please?
Yeah, no, that's not happening, dude. Like, okay, here's the one thing about time travel in Halome, as I have developed according to the physics or whatever. Don't worry, there's no child fucking involved. It's actually the opposite.
What?
I don't think living things can move through time. I'm pretty sure there's some really rare exceptions, but I'm pretty sure that things traveling through time can only happen if they're not alive. So when you send something back in time, you basically are only sending back the non-living thing, or you're causing the whole thing to... So maybe what it is it gets sent back in time without anybody in it. And it, like, gets sent back to this period. Everybody's fucking gone, either, like, raptured, or they're literally just dead corpses. Those rot away. The city starts to collapse and things. And by the time that people rediscover it, it is just ruins. And it's like the ruins of ruins. But those ruins were built on another Pradasati, an older Pradasati.
We built this city on its own ruins. That's a great song.
So anyways, I think that's a fun idea. Okay. So we've got this rod.
The staff, you mean?
Staff, right? No, I've got a rod.
You do, Frank. You should put it away. We're doing the podcast.
We're going nowhere, and we've been going nowhere fast for the last, like, 40 fucking minutes, dude. We've got the staff. And one of the things I know that you were curious about, was its involvement in the activity of Pradasati. I think other artifacts, I don't think it's like a thing where all the artifacts were, like, influenced or affected by this one. I think it might affect others. But I don't think it's, like, for instance, the Tidelings, I think it was kind of that there was some sort of weird paradimensional shit that was going on there, but it's not necessarily that there was other artifacts it was interacting with. And I think that it might've been dormant on some level this entire time. I don't know that it's, like, active.
The staff.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that it hasn't been just, like, spewing magic. I think that it might have a kind of semi-active state, maybe. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on. Maybe it needs to be channeled by a magic user in order to be in its fully realized state.
Mm-hmm. What if I'm wondering, okay, this is going to sound like a pivot, but I've been wondering this entire time, and we were kind of talking about this last episode, and we were talking about stuff last episode, and I was thinking about this. We have some figures that keep on showing up in the history of Pradasati, and one of them is Ostavix, who, yep. Oz and Vix become this, like, you know, treasure hunting team, where, like, one is literally the Tidling of the other. But the number one figure that I think about is, what's his name? The golem creature?
Thog.
Where was Thog when this stuff happened? Is this something that Thog was aware of? Like, he has these big machinations of that he's been charting throughout time, this big, you know, lore keepers-esque shit going on. And I think here's my question. Is it something where he's reading the leaves, the tea leaves, about reality, and he has this kind of subconscious knowledge of greater things beyond what he's consciously aware of? Is that stuff about Pradasati eminently, or is it about the entirety of the world or reality or something, at least something bigger than Pradasati? Like, does he see this as a completion of his role when the city gets destroyed? Or is he actually not on the island and he escapes from the loop? This isn't actually the entirety of his story.
I mean, maybe Thog is on a loop because he's technically not living matter. He's a golem.
We did establish that.
So it's possible he gets teleported back and then walks into the sea and waits and walks back out of the sea at the appropriate time. Or maybe, given how, if this is indeed a loop, maybe there's like 20 thogs and they're all just running around. Okay. Just every continuation loop, you should get another thog.
You know what? This is going to be really frustrating, but yes.
More thogs?
More looping thog.
Just one thog?
No.
Okay.
I'm saying yes to both.
Okay, so many looping thogs.
I think we have isolated iterations of Thog that have escaped. Like, it's not, he's not a robot. He makes choices, and those choices are heavily channeled, I think, where most of the time he ends up repeating himself. But I think that there are times when he walks away, and there are many, many more Thogs. Like, throughout time in history, like just gone back over and over again, that have walked away. And so, like, I guess there's some future where if this isn't stopped, then
the world will just be thogs.
Yeah, the world will just be all thog, which is a fun problem to have to deal with in the future. But yes, no, I think that sometimes he escapes and sometimes he doesn't.
Here's a question for you, Frank. This is an important one. Is Thog, does he have a soul, or is he just anima?
That's a good question. He is a construct from the Golden Hour. So I would say if we wanted to, he could definitely have a soul. I don't know if he does.
Yeah, I think it might be difficult to copy and paste souls.
Well, it might not be a copy paste, it might be a transfer. It might be that Thog's soul. So remember that a soul does not contain memories.
Yeah,
that minds, souls,
oh,
and
fuck.
Spirits are... No. Spirits don't contain memories either. Souls contain personalities. So a character, your character is within the... what, or a person within Halome, their character resides within their soul. As the spirit is the thing that tethers them and keeps them to reality. So without a spirit, the soul starts to drift away and lose its personality until eventually there is no personality whatsoever. They are simply just a being without any distinction. But yes, so it could be that an individual from maybe Thog's origins was somebody trying to survive death. They like saw the imminentness, or was like basically a bunker buddy for the end of the world, saw that the Ash Curse was coming or something like that, and then imbued a construct with their soul so that they would remain. Something like that. But also, I'd be totally fine if he was just like made out of anima or something. Or something else, even. Ki. You know, we could say that he's just pure ki energy.
I like anima.
I kind of like the idea of making him unique from other constructs. Because I know I said golem, but I think we have said in the past that he's not really a golem. Like, he's different from that.
Is he adamantine?
He could be. That'd be interesting. We keep on bringing up adamantine, for those of you who are not sure what we're talking about here. Adamantine is it's a theoretical metal that, well, kind of, that is basically impossible to actually construct. It is something that you get mithril, and you rust it for millions or billions of years, and you get adamantine, which is why it's basically a theoretical thing. It's like you can't actually create it. It requires time dilation. And for the 99.9% of even like the most venerated of wizards don't know how to create it. It's got incredibly like unique and strange properties as a result of this, but it's essentially impossible to create unless you're doing weird shit with time.
All right, so here's a question for you, Frank.
And at long enough scales where even people who are doing weird shit with time don't necessarily know how to create it.
What if instead of saying oxidation, which is what rusting is, what if we say it's...
Oh.
Radioactive decay.
What if it's not radioactive decay? What if it's the equivalent of oxidation but with magic?
Yeah.
You immerse it in a stream of magic for a long time, and it's like oxidation, where it like takes on weird properties. I don't know. That could be fun.
That could be fun.
Because Mithril's like in did Lord of the Rings invent Mithril, or did Mithril come from folklore before then?
I believe Lord of the Rings invented. It's just true silver. Okay. It's just silver that's like strong as steel.
And oh, right. Yeah. Well, okay. True silver, that's something that comes from like the philosophers, right? Didn't they? Isn't there like an alchemy thing that's like true silver is like the spirit of silver or something like that?
Maybe.
I'm curious.
Alchemy.
I feel like that's like an Aristotelian thing.
Definitely not an Aristotelian thing. I would know about that if it was.
True silver is getting me a lot of results from World of Warcraft.
Yep.
There's Forgotten Realms true silver. Baranar true silver? No, that's a demon.
From what I understand, alchemy's whole thing was to purify certain metals and transmute lead into gold and create an elixir of immortality and the panaceos, which is the some sort of concoction to cure any disease. And Alkahest, of course, the universal solvent.
Yeah. Based on the writings of Jared Token, he invented Mithril, okay, which is cool.
There you go.
But yeah, it's described as quote-unquote silvered steel. It is lighter and stronger than steel. Okay, sure. Great. But yeah, Mithril, anyways, I was trying to remember whether it had like not magical properties, but the opposite. Like it was dulling of magical effects. Like magic had no effect on it. That might not be true though. I'm asking you because you know this shit. Is there any lore around that of Mithril's interactions with magic?
Tolkien didn't really do enchanted stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's no really magical items. It's just like...
Wait, what about the rings?
It's true. The rings are about as close as we get. The rings were... When you create... So, this is what I say where... Either like nothing is or everything is. So, everything that any elf makes is imbued with a part of them. So, every single product of elven stuff is enchanted, which is why all elven stuff is better than anything anyone else makes. Now the dwarves,
do elves poop?
They don't enchant stuff, but they make really, really
good
stuff. Do they poop?
Yeah Is their poop better than other people's poop?
I imagine. Okay. They probably, it's in 40k elf poop is these little like crystals that smell like flowers.
J.R. Token thought that elf poop was better than other people's poop.
Yeah, I mean, they're perfect.
Reminder
Christians.
That the elves are a stand-in for Christians. Yeah. Just kind of put that in your mind somewhere, listener.
So
this is a great episode. We're doing so well here.
All right, so basically, this is like Miravoir, the elven wine, is better than every other wine. It just like does maximally wine things. It like encourages you with this like liquid courage, and it makes you warm, like you know, all this stuff. So it's just better wine.
Sure.
And the rings were invested with the desires of the wielders. So for example, Sauron's ring was invested with his desire to dominate, and thus it had power to dominate. The rings that the elves crafted were of healing and of renewing and preservation, because they didn't want beautiful things to die.
Sure. Okay. All right, sure.
So yes, there is enchanted stuff, but it's weird. And you don't enchant, there's no spells, really. You're enchanting things
with
your
desire.
Well,
there's not really spells in general. Like, spells...
There's words of power? He said that's mentioned by Gandalf before?
Yeah. Yes, and it's mentioned by Gandalf, but we don't see, I mean, which basically means that it exists.
Yeah.
But, like, we don't see any examples of when Gandalf, the kinds of shit that Gandalf actually pulls off is not usually, like, very magically. Like, we see him, like, spout fire from his staff.
Yeah, he lights things on fire a few times.
He kills a Balrog, which means he's a great warrior. Like, he does something really fucking impressive, which is you kill, like, basically an archdemon.
Yeah.
Of, like, one of the circles of hell, essentially. But, we don't really see him do a lot of magic.
Most of the time, it's very, it's not very flashy, his magic stuff. So we see him, he talks about sealing a door with magic, and then the Balrog counterspells his spell to seal the door, and then that...
So we don't even see the effects of
he
that.
He just talks about it. Well, we see him, like, get thrown down from an explosion.
he talks about it. He's really hardy.
No, we do see him, like...
Dude, he's a fucking muscle wizard.
He is. He's a strong wizard, but
he's casting spells with fist.
Yeah, we see the fire. We see that he's like a lore master. We see him use light a lot.
Wait, I'm sorry, lore master? Yeah. Explain that one. What do you mean in terms of is that a magical thing to be able to know stories?
No, not really. He remembers a lot of shit, which, you know, is not really magical. But he does use light a lot. He blinds people with light.
That's true.
He, like, gets the writers to leave him alone with his, like, bright light. Yeah.
Jarrow Token's wizards suck shit.
Well, they're just not very flashy.
Well, also, they're not very... I don't know. I feel like you'd solve a lot more problems with, Fuck, man, this is a... I don't know. Yeah. This is a terrible episode. I'm sorry, everyone who's listening to this. We are all over the place. How do we salvage this? I know we're at the hour mark of the recording, which actually means we're probably about halfway through the episode. We've still got half of an episode that we can, like, rein this back in if we fucking hang on to our focus here. I don't know. Okay, so as far as the Thog stuff is concerned, we don't have to talk about that for very long. I was just curious as to what he was doing. I think the thing that I had really been thinking about and that's been revolving in my mind is that there really does feel like almost as a metaphor of a prism, that there's almost like a reverse prisming. Like a lot of things are converging, it feels like, on this day or in this period. And I'm just, I don't know, I have through my mind rolling around, like, what's going on with the merfolk? What are the treasure hunters doing? There is something about this story, especially the fact that the lore keepers are keeping track of it, that is more than just, like, random events. Even within Halume, where things are characters beyond their personhood, like, characterness supersedes personhood, if that makes sense. Things have archetypes and they follow generalized patterns. And I'm just curious to see, like, yeah, I don't know. Thog feels almost like an embodiment of that, the character of Parasad.
Right, here's a question in a lot of ways. Friend. What do you think of this idea? The greatest secret of the lore keepers of Parasad is they know exactly how it ends. But their dedication to the story and not interfering and just like recording means that they will always end the same way, or that they won't take a step or tell anyone about it.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see if we can't. I have a thought.
All right.
Prophecy doesn't really feel like it's in the wheelhouse of the lore keepers. They're more like the equivalent of psychohistory. If you've ever read the Foundation series, of more like mapping out these broad generalities of what may happen sometime in the future of like thousands of years. You're holding up Lord of the Rings.
I am.
Why are you holding up Lord of the Rings?
Because I like it.
Okay, yeah, we fully lost the thread here. Carter is like tenderly clutching his very favorite trilogy to his face. Now he's rubbing his face. His chin on the pages. I think that the lore keepers might know what's happening. Did you ever read 100 Years of Solitude?
No.
Okay, man, that's a fucking book. It's honestly, I feel a lot of kinship between 100 Years of Solitude and that town and that family and the shit that's going on in Padasadi. What if the lore keepers, there's this narrative of one lore keeper that is convinced that things are going to be destroyed and they're not sure when, and they've been charting it for hundreds of years, and they don't know why they know that it's going to be destroyed, but they just know that it's going to be destroyed. And maybe they're an elf, so they've been here for a long time. And they are isolated in their like chambers by themselves. Here, let me finish this thought. I see your finger. They're isolated in their chamber by themselves, and literally as they are discovering everything, like, snaps together for them. They put all the pieces together, the evidence is there, they figure out the track of what's happening as the wave is crashing down over Padasadi. And there's like this, in the last instance, they are predicting the future of the past as it comes to happen.
I don't know about that.
They recover their own fucking notes.
That is what I wanted to say, is that their notes could still be a thing.
What if they recover their own fucking notes, but it's literally in the last, like, in the final seconds before everything is destroyed? I don't know. I guess here's my question. Narratively, what do we gain from the Lorekeepers knowing that everything's going to end if it doesn't actually change anything? What is engaging about that narratively over sort of, I don't know. I feel like I could write a short story on the thing that, I don't know, my perspective here. I want to know what short story you'd write, kind of approaching it from, like, they already know and have known for hundreds of years and they've recovered the notes, and it's like, you know.
Because it tells us something about the organization. The organization is not about saving people or changing the world. It's about understanding and recording and attempting to interpret what's going on.
So, okay, thought.
Answer.
There is an organization that does do that. Okay. However, they are not the Lorekeepers.
They're the Borekeepers.
They're so boring. The... what you're thinking of, I think we do have that. I think we do have individuals who know what's going to happen. I don't think that they're Lorekeepers, because that would be overlapping kind of the natures and responsibilities with the people of the Leyline Spire Island of
it's true. Truth. That's true.
That's very much their whole thing, is they're everything that you just said. They're about not interacting, just gathering information. They're just about cataloging the events of the world. And all of that is like flooding into them and stuff. And so they've maybe even seen this repetition. They've recovered the notes, or they're aware of this happening. I think that the Lorekeepers are mortal enough where that they don't see this as some sort of holy, I think, I don't know. I mean, everybody probably has a different thing that they're doing with it, but it's not just about cataloging information. Cause if that was the case, then maybe the Leyline Spire people are just Lorekeepers, and that's not as interesting to me anyways. I think it's more fun to play with the idea of, and maybe we just agree to disagree with this one, but I think it might be more fun to have figures who, I don't know, there's something kind of like fun and tragic about the prophet who discovers they're right, or the evidence for why they're right as it's happening.
Yeah, I suppose. When it comes to prophets and seers, I'm more interested in the what is that seer of Troy? I always forget. She was cursed by Zeus. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. Are you you're not talking about the Oracle of Delphi, are you?
No, not the Pythia. Cassandra. So Cassandra was the daughter of Priam, the king of Troy, and she was cursed with foreknowledge of the Troy's downfall.
Mm-hmm.
And the that doesn't sound like a curse. The curse is that no one will believe her.
Okay. What if we have, you know what I would actually, I think could be fun, is we have an individual who is maybe either part of the Lorekeepers or has been kicked out of the Lorekeepers, who is babblingly convinced that the city is going to be destroyed, but they're like unreasonable in it, and like they're like a doom all of us doom person. And maybe Thog knows, and he's the one person who can have a conversation with them, and he's like, yeah, no, I know that this is going to happen. And they're like, why don't you do something about it? Like, oh my gosh, like you believe me. Everyone believes you or whatever. And they're like, it's not the point. That's not what's it's like, but nobody else does. I kind of like that idea of sort of the tragedy there. And maybe that's the thing, is the head lorekeeper discovers that this person was right all along when they recover their own fucking notes from, you know, the destruction of the city with just enough time to see the wave come crashing down over them. But that does appeal to me.
Yeah.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
I just think an entire organization of people who are believing that, it'd be too easy for that to get out. And like,
well, yeah, it's
if
again,
this is going to happen, it's going to happen. It's, you know, classic, and I feel like that's something that could stop it.
It's the classic inner circle, outer circle thing, where it's like the, you know, the president, when they take the presidency, they're like, oh, by the way, Area 51, aliens are real.
Oh, yeah. You hear that from Obama recently?
Yep.
Yeah. Basically confirmed it.
Yep.
It's kind of funny.
It's like that.
Yeah.
When you get the keys to maybe. The castle.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'll say there's some of that going on. I think ultimately this is where my mind goes is, do you ever get deja vu?
Yes. A little bit too often for my own liking.
Is it like a weekly basis kind of situation?
Probably more bi-monthly.
Okay, I get deja vu on a like 1 to 3 times a week, and it's weird because I don't know how other people's deja vu works or whatever. I know I think it's just cross wiring in the brain, right? It's your brain experiencing current memories and the subconscious, not current memories. Current experiences, and it's like the same synapses are firing as in the past, and so it thinks, oh wait, I'm remembering a thing that's happening or something.
It's something weird. Yeah.
Yeah. But for me, the way that deja vu is experienced is it's oftentimes I'm convinced that I have dreamed of this moment already, and as it's happening, if I could just utter the words fast enough, I could predict what the other person is going to say. But I'm also simultaneously locked into experiencing that moment as though I was like outside of my own body. So like I'm just saying the words that I already was going to say, and the other person says the words that they're going to say, or I don't know, the car drives by at the same time it's always going to drive by or whatever. But it's like I have this sensation that I'm like, no, I remember 3 months ago on this one specific night, I had the dream of this happening already. And if I was only faster, somehow I could say the thing before the other person says the thing, or I could say that a car was driving by, but it never happens. Yeah. Because again, this is just a trick of the brain. I like the idea. This is really, that's where I was coming from with this. Is it just because that's appealing to me? Because it feels very much like something that I've always thought was like a strange sensation. Was like the person discovering their prophecy as it was occurring. But I think both could happen. I'm okay with both of those things going on. So I don't know. Those are some kind of zoomed in things. I don't know. Maybe we actually kind of start to wrap it up and just sort of regroup, come back at this for our third and potentially final episode. Although honestly, with this, I think we may have guaranteed ourselves a four-parter here because we're so fucking off the rails.
What if we sent the staff back to Joe Rogan?
Oh, God. He can repeat his first 6,969 episodes over and over again. Or 420. It would be 420 episodes. Does he have an episode 420?
Probably just him talking to his resident weed plant.
I'm going to do something I've never done before, which is look up Joe Rogan's podcast.
Not live on air, Frank.
There's a Joe Rogan Experience Review podcast. Investigate Joe Rogan, a podcast where a powerful individual fact checks and investigates and sometimes wild claims by the eccentric guests, which I would be like, oh, cool. Except I don't know if that Elmart's coming through at all. It's like a third eye kind of weird laser person. The Joe Rogan Experience, which is very good. That's a very good name for it. Today's guest on the Joe Rogan Experience, another Joe Rogan Experience podcast. This is the worst podcast, the world's worst podcast. No, .. Let's call it .. That's very good. Because then the next thing that it fills is, oh, the Joe Rogan Experience. Better than Joe Rogan. And then just one called Spirituality by a Joe Rogan. Number one podcast for humans going through a spiritual awakening. Open conversations about things all humans talk about but never speak about. I'm pretty sure this person just said that it's a by Joe Rogan, but it might not actually be. And there's also then 40 fucking feeds that are just the Joe Rogan Experience. This is wild. Okay, wait. Now, okay.
I'm going to close this out, Frank.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, we need to end.
Thanks for letting us be your escape.
That last one I showed to Carter was called Rogan and RuneScape. And now everything, the universe is folded in on itself, and this podcast episode needs to end before that black hole eats us all.
If you forgot your
words. Oh, shit, it's coming fast. You gotta hurry.
You wanna make others forget forward, and every podcasting service known to humankind, so don't be greedy, share with your friends.
Did we discuss something that was confusing of hell? Of course we did. But as always, you can find any explanation of it in the... I can't find... Man, where is it? Shit! That... It's getting closer. I can't find the actual. I minimized it. Oh, there's the mithril. Okay, yeah. Chances are there's some compacts in the podcast description. So go there. You can also explore the subreddit or reach us at the Lorekeepers on Twitter. Or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com for questions or things you'd like to hear in future episodes.
Thank you, as always, to Josh Silker for his composition of Land of Heroes, the Lorekeepers theme, and again, thank you to Sam Wade for the beautiful new album art that still exists and is still new. And you can see Sam Wade's stuff at By Sam Wade on Instagram.
Yeah, it's not that fucking hard, dude. Until next time, thanks. That's not what we say. Don't forget, there are always more universes to end. You know, I don't know if there will be a next time, but if we somehow survive this collapse... goodbye, and Interstellar was right.
Love goodbye, is everyone. The answer.
There are always more Interstellars to Black Hole.
Goodbye.
Basically, you get more Slayer points for the every 10th and 50th task that you complete. And each Slayer task is like, go kill 22 birds. I need you to kill 17 cows. Although typically it's more like, I need you to kill 130 Dagonoth kings or whatever the fuck. Or Mithril dragons or whatever the fuck. However, the lowest level Slayer tasks are a lot easier to complete than the highest level Slayer tasks. And even though they only reward 1 point, you gain... 8 times as many points for completing the 10th and 50th tasks. So you go to the lowest level Slayer who tells you to kill 17 cows or, you know, 20 spiders or whatever, and then do all of that in like the lowest like leveled area, kill all of that shit. And then for your 10th task, you go talk to the highest level that you can do and get awarded like 90 points for it.
I see.
Yeah, yeah, it's real clever. So anyways, yeah, it means that you have to run around a lot and then teleport back. And so I'm like completing tasks like in 40 seconds and then teleporting back to the same location and taking another task. And then the final one usually takes about half an hour.
Yeah, you gotta pay more attention when you're shanking the Mithril dragons.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're shanking the Mithril dragons, you're doing it wrong, because... Well, daggers might not be a bad idea. Two-handed weapons typically are better for AoE. Not that I could AoE Mithril dragons. Holy shit, I'm not strong enough for that. But, you know, if I was using a magic, see, they're weak to magic because they're made out of metal, so...
Of course, you know, everyone knows that metal things are weak to magic.
I mean, there's precedent, you know? It's getting it from, like, fucking D&D or whatever, you know?
Are metal
Wait, is that not a
magic?
Thing? Is the combat triangle not a thing in, like, other...
The combat triangle?
The combat triangle. Shit, maybe this is just an exclusively RuneScape-y thing. It made intuitive sense to me as a kid. Metal is conducive to magic, like it works like a conductor. So wearing metal armor means that you are more likely to be harmed by magic. Magic works along like conductor insulator stuff. So leather armors that like a ranger might wear.
I think this is an Albion. I think it's an Albion online.
Oh, they maybe have it in Albion as well?
Yeah.
Okay. Which came first? How old is Albion?
Albion's not that old. RuneScape definitely came first.
Gotcha. I mean, I think they're probably pulling it from somewhere anyways. But yeah, like, so leather, not as conducive, you know, it's an insulator.
More magic defense, less physical defense.
Exactly. Rangers have an advantage over magicians because they're shooting into cloth armor, right? So they're literally just firing arrows into like cloth. And melee people have an advantage against rangers because the close range means that they're at a disadvantage, etc. That actually does
armor,
have
armor, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so in Albion, cloth armor has the highest magic resist, but the lowest physical resist. Leather is in the middle for both, and then metal armor has the lowest magical, highest physical resist.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah. I've always kind of looked at the whole, I don't know, I remember old days, World of Warcraft, there's some fun stuff there in terms of, like, I was a mage, so I had cloth armor, but you use, like, arcane, like, frost armor or whatever to, like, increase your armor rating significantly.
Yeah, I didn't like that part of Albion, because in order to be, like, a tank, you wear metal armor and then, like, a cloth hat. And I'm like, this is just dumb.
Really?
Yeah, because that's you need to funny. Get high magic armor as well. So you need to have some physical, some magic. So
interesting.
So you need cloth and metal. And I'm like, it's really dumb that my like big, beefy tank guy
that's
is running
very
around
silly.
With like,
we're
big
like a little
metal chest plate. And then like he's got like some nice cloth trousers and like a little hat. It's like, no.
Yeah. There are some situations where people do that kind of thing in RuneScape. But typically... There are hybrid armors that they mitigate all of the negatives, but they don't increase your defense against specific things. They just don't have minuses.
Okay.
But like there's power armor and tank armor in RuneScape. The difference between the two, tank armor has higher defense, but you don't have as much, like it doesn't give you any attack bonuses. If you're wearing stuff that's specifically aimed towards a part of the combat triangle and you wear that and it gives you bonuses in that's power armor. And typically that's what most people use when they're training or whatever, because yes, you'll take more damage, but it's not usually super important that you take damage, especially if like in a game like RuneScape, every slot in your inventory you can use like have a heal. So like you can heal, you know, 2200 health out of your, you know, 9,000 health or something like that. And so as long as you have enough food, you don't really need to worry about, it just means more trips to the bank or whatever to get your stuff back.
Yeah, the Skyrim strat of just like, you swing once and then you just eat like 100
eat like 100 cabbages.
And then you swing again.
I remember way back in the day when like it first came out, there was like a Skyrim in real life video, and it was somebody like somebody was like swinging their sword at this person, and then they like pause, and then they just say like consume like 100 cabbages or whatever, and then there's just like cabbages starting to fall from the sky, and they're just like trying to shove them in their face. They're sitting against a tree. It's very funny. Well, the person is like frozen with the sword in front of them. Skyrim is very memeable. It comes from that like meme worthy time where like, I don't know, it came out a few years after Revenge of the Sith, but I feel like both of those were like heavy on the memes in the world of like aughts, late aughts memes.
Skyrim has, I still have one of my favorite moments in all video games in Skyrim. I was scaling a mountain on a horse, as you do.
Of course. Those and, fucking badasses who do not give a shit.
Yeah, and then I like leaped off a side of the mountain onto what I thought was a statue, but it was a dragon. That was, you know, on one of those like shrines. And so I land on the dragon with my horse, and then it takes off and it shoots me into the air like thousands of feet. And so I'm just flying on my horse. And then I land in the middle of like a plane. And my horse crumples beneath me. And then I stand up because my horse dies, but I don't.
Holy shit, dude.
It was just like amazing because I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Which really just tells me that Just Cause 3 is the best version of Skyrim.
Yeah.
It's just, have you ever played Just Cause 3?
I haven't.
Holy shit, dude. I mean, all of those games are pretty good, but Just Cause 3 is, I think, the best of all of them. It's a game where it really is, it's like playing San Andreas with the cheats on. Like, or if the designers had made San Andreas with the cheats being on in mind. You have a grappling hook, you probably know that.
Yeah.
You can grapple objects together and have multiple tethers, so you can have... And, like, literally, this is the stuff that you, like, level up and you put, like, points into investing them. Hook. Yeah, and you can have, like, up to, like, six different things, like, grappled together. So there's so many... Dude, we fucking... you can also order, like, vehicles whenever the hell you want. And oftentimes they can have, like, crazy boosts or be, like... Literally, you can, like, basically order an F1, like, a Formula One racing car whenever you want and give it, like, a jump. Like, and it just, like, bounces off the ground. We ordered a solid gold helicopter and then into a cow pasture and then used grappling hooks to grappling hook a cow to each one of the different blades. And then we took off and it merry-go-rounded all of the cows and ended up actually being able to take off for all of like 14 seconds before the physics just got very confused. And the helicopter ended up like flipping upside down, which then you can also just get out of the helicopter and hang from the bottom. So we did that and we were literally like hanging from the bottom, but then like the grappling hook flipped over onto the side, which further fucked up the physics. And all of it was just, it started to like pinwheel like crazy. It's so fucking ridiculous, man. It's such a fun game. Also, every gas station is housing a secret incendiary nuke. If you, the explosions in that game, you drive anything into a gas station, the entire thing explodes like a whole city block. It's ridiculous. Jesus. It's very good. Yeah, it's a very fun game. Should we start the episode?
Perhaps we should.
I think right now I'm more interested in continuing to explore stuff about what's going on with this artifact. I think maybe we save the final episode for like Day of the Wave and what comes next.
Day of the Wave, awesome, great album art. Great album.
Day of the Wave.
Great album.
Great man. Album. Yeah, we all love that album.
Yeah.
People are saying this more and more.
It's the Beach Boys' best album, Day of the Wave.
Day of the Wave. What about the Wave of the Dave?
The Wave of the Dave.
Let's start there. Also, not convinced yet that it's a staff. I feel like we could do something cooler than necessarily having to be like a staff, but
it's a rod.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be just us. You're saying magic stick is really what you're saying.
I'm saying
we could do better than magic stick. Yeah, I think we could do better than big magic stick.
Wand is also magic stick, but just, you know, a little bit.
Wand is small magic stick.
Well, rod is also small magic stick. It's just like girthy.
It depends on the rod. I don't know. I think the immovable rod is like 3 feet long or something. I feel like most.
Yeah, but a staff is like 6 feet.
Are not that. Yeah, staff is like 4 to 5 feet. In
that's
my
like
mind.
A quarter staff. Come on.
Maybe. I don't know.
A full staff.
Are there? What's a full staff? They have quarter staffs. I know that's not what that means, but I want to imagine a 20-foot long staff, and it's just called like a gallon staff or whatever. It's four quarter staffs that have been like fused together.
Let's see, staff a quarter staff is a European pole weapon.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
Yeah, who used them?
I'll look it up.
Travelers? Like, who is using a quarterstaff for actual combat?
Okay, a staff being made from quarter-sawn hardwood. There you go. That's where it gets its name.
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
I thought it had to do with, like, quartering. Like, it's somebody that's, like, to protect a barracks or something, they'd give him a quarterstaff. I don't know.
George Silver, an English fencer who wrote two books... and 1599
or in close quarters is kind of what I really thought it was.
Including lengthy sections on staff fighting does not use the term quarterstaff, but instead calls it a short staff as opposed to a long staff. The quarterstaff is 7 or 8 feet in length.
Wait, so then what's a long staff?
And the
long staff is
12 feet long.
You're fighting with a 12-foot long rod?
Yeah.
I guess that kind of makes sense in a world where, like, hey, pole arms are a fucking thing. Like, people are attaching swords to the ends of sticks. So if you want to fight with just a stick, you need to have a longer stick than their sword plus stick.
Like, pikes are really big. Pikes are, like, really long.
Yeah, you can get shit that's, like, 16, 18 feet long. Like, they literally were, like, trying to make things as long as possible because it's...
Yeah, you're away from the swords.
Yeah.
If you've got a big pike. So the northern pike is a species of carnivorous fish.
We need to start the episode.
Wait, I need to see how long a pike is.
I was going to say something else, and yet you totally derailed me.
10 to 25
feet.
All right.
That's a long... It's a long... Oh, wait, what's a pike?
A pike?
No, are you saying that's how long a pike can get?
Yeah, it's between 10 and 25 feet long.
25-foot long pike.
Yep. It's just a wooden shaft with an iron or a steel spearhead.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I can't imagine.
25 feet.
25 feet?
Yeah.
Dude, that's the length of, like, my fucking apartment. Like, I'm on one end trying to haft it, and, like there's any sort of accuracy with that at all. I mean, really, that is what happened, I'm sure, is, like, they got to that point. They're like, this is basically the limits of, like, a strong person holding it, like, as far out as they can reach. They're not really able to do much with this
thing. Apparently, it doesn't weigh that much. It's, like, 13 pounds.
People forget, like, you have to apply physics to swords. Swords are not heavy. They're not. They can't be because there's so little material. If you look at the density of, like, a sword, a good sword is very thin. Right. And yeah, it might have a thicker tang, like where it actually connects because it needs to, because of course, to have it so thin, it snaps, right? Stronger metals let you do smaller blades, and iron is more dense than steel. And so, like, you know, steel is a better blade. But literally, if you're looking at, like, a 6-foot long piece of steel and you do the physics calculations for how much material you actually have in cubic inches, like it amounts to somewhere between, like, 2.5 to 4.5 pounds. Swords are not heavy.
Yeah, because
specifically if they're steel. If you have an iron sword that's that long, like, yeah, you probably have something that's closer to, like, 12 or 13 pounds in your hands, and it's a lot harder to manipulate. But, like, you know,
the whole point
a two-handed broadsword, a claymore, like, might be 7 pounds.
Yeah, the whole point is you want to swing it around for a long time.
Yeah, exactly. If you think about swinging around. Now, if you think about swinging around, like, a 5 to 10 pound weight, you know, 7.5 pound weight in your hand, like, yeah, like, after a couple of minutes, you're probably going to get tired because you're swinging it around like it's a sword. Of course, you're going to get tired with that. And these are less balanced than that because you're holding them on one end. So you have to have more strength. But, like, again, the whole point is to be able to swing it around for a long time. So,
and to really get some weight behind it.
Yes.
Because, you know, people are chopping people in, you know, not clean in half, but you want to really... Mm-hmm. Really cut someone up pretty badly.
Right. Well, and also it depends on the weapon too. Like by the Middle Ages, a lot of weapons, longer pole arms and things, those, the amount of momentum you can get on the end of one of those things, if you're, like, swinging, like, long axe, like, you can actually cleave into armor like that. But for the most part, like, a claymore has a blunted head because it's not meant for slicing, it's meant for crushing.
Yeah,
you dent the armor and cause internal hemorrhaging and shit because you've broken in their rib cage and, like, their skin and everything, like, crunched on the side of their body. So yeah, you can break arms and shit like that. And then you just debilitate them.
Yeah, and then there's the classic
which is why clerics use maces. Well, clerics use maces because they couldn't draw blood for whatever reason.
Yeah. So, like, what is it
in the Bible?
Half swording. Do you know this technique?
That's where you hold it, like, in a gauntleted hand, and then
you stab. Use it to stab.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You get more power in that, and also you can stab it instead of slash. Yeah. Exactly. Plus, it's closer quarters. Again, if you have a longer weapon,
if you've got like a 6-foot long sword and you're trying to swing.
somebody comes into you, you know, you have to get that distance in the first place, yeah. which is not easy because the person's swinging it around them and you could die. But if you can close that distance, like you have a lot more advantage if you have something shorter, like a, I mean, I don't know. Nobody really used daggers, but you'd have a short sword. You'd have like a 1.5 to 2 foot long, you know, a piece of metal that you could use in closer combat.
I mean, a dagger is pretty big as a sidearm.
Yeah, daggers can be like 12 to 18 inches. I think a short sword is 18 inches to 2.5 feet.
Yeah,
right?
So from what I understand, daggers are very similar to our current combat situation of a sidearm. It, like, you have a
right,
pistol.
Yeah.
You're not going to use your pistol unless you're in very close quarters or
right.
unless you're out of ammo. So yeah. if someone takes
yes.
your fucking sword, you're going to pull out your dagger. Or if someone's, like, grabbing you, you might drop your sword, pull out your dagger, and fucking stab them.
Yeah, yeah. Or you can hold your sword in one gauntleted hand and,
yeah,
you know,
pull
and stab them with the other.
Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
So there you
but
go.
That's actually part of the point is you can hold a sword in a gauntleted hand.
Yes.
Like if even if you're swinging that thing pretty fucking hard, you might not actually cleave armor. Cleaving was like a that's why I like that shows up as like an ability and stuff in like video games is because cleaving armor is not easy. Well, also sounds cool. That's probably
yeah,
part of it.
Is
but
a
like
great word.
But like it's not easy to do. You yeah. have to literally like take metal at its strongest point, which is like when it's perpendicular, you know, it'd be a lot easier to split it on its edge. You're not splitting it on its edge, you're splitting it on its side. You'd have to do a tremendous amount of pressure, and the thing probably bends first before shearing.
And it's
so,
the
yeah.
shape of the armor is typically rounded, so a lot of the force is going to be deflected.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
This
yeah,
is why
that's
shields
why
are not square.
That's why a lot of like modern Hollywood fantasy armor is rarely actually looks like the normal the real thing. Most of the pictures of knights from back in the day look like they've got like a pot belly or whatever, and it's oftentimes because of the concavity of like a chest piece or whatever. You wanted it to bow out because that added security. When you think about it's this old thing. You take a flat piece of paper, you roll it into a cone and tape it, and now all of a sudden you can set books on top of it because the circle is equal pressure. It's a very strong shape to have, and so then you do the same thing with armor. And also because glancing blows, it is much harder to land it because you have to hit it basically tangentially,
yeah.
which is really hard, fucking hard to do. So
yeah, which is also why you get those big pauldrons a lot, is to protect the neck. And they're rounded, so when you hit it, it'll glance off and it won't just,
mm-hmm.
like, stab into the pauldron.
Exactly. Yeah, which is also then why... So, yeah, so ultimately, like, pole arms and other extremely long weapons that you could create a significant enough amount of momentum, which was typically just, like, the first line, that was, like, kind of the your frontmost ranks, those guys, the pikemen or whatever... Those are the only ones who are really going to have enough power to actually cleave armor. For the most part, anybody who's holding a sword is probably going to be going for joints.
Yep.
Like they're trying to get up and inside the armor. Or, you know, the whole the Claymore or Warhammer kind of situation. Although, again, Warhammer's A, not nearly as big as the ones you see in fantasy video games or whatever. Typically, it was just a concentrated ball or something on the end. Like it might have a flat head, but typically a ball was actually better.
Well, you won't. I like the war
depending on
picks.
What you want.
Well, they, you know,
yeah.
basically you get a hammerhead and then the back, it's like a hooked thing so you can hook people.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Those There's all good. Sorts of fun stuff you can do on the battlefield.
It is gross, though. It is so fucking gross.
Yeah, it's actually super gruesome. But yeah, my point was just like same for the same reasons as we were talking about with weight. Like you don't actually want a Warhammer to be super heavy because you can build up a ton of momentum from your body just swinging that thing fucking fast. And you do have to be strong, and it is
yeah.
typically heavier, like it should be, but it's concentrated weight on the end of a stick, not like the whole fucking thing is, you know...
A really girthy stick.
Yeah, typically Warhammers had a wooden haft because it was a lot lighter, and because, like, you weren't worried about that thing, you know... I don't know, anybody who is already gonna, like, try and swing at the Warhammer with a sword deserved to win, because they got in close enough quarters with you that they could swing their sword and cut off, like... the end, which you could actually do with a sword.
Yeah.
Like you can cut through wood that way.
Yeah.
It's not easy and it probably will splinter the wood and fuck up your sword.
Yeah,
but they've already won that fight anyways by that point because they got in between you and the end of your Warhammer or war pick or whatever you're using.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Fantasy armaments with Frank and Carter.
Man, I'm kind of impressed at us. I've never actually really like expressed all of my weapon knowledge before, and that was more than I thought that I had in me.
Yep. There you go.
So I learned a thing or two from you as well.
Yep, okay. Always something we can learn. We don't even get us started on crossbows.
Oh, fuck, man. Okay, the most ridiculous thing, I think I told you this in RuneScape, is that crossbows are like the one thing that you can dual wield as a ranged weapon. Yes. You can dual wield like throwing weapons, like knives or whatever, but for two-handed, you either have like two-handed weapons, which you have either bows, short bows, or like a two-handed crossbow, or you have two one-handed crossbows that you're firing in both hands, which is like, how the fuck are you reloading this?
Use the teeth.
Also, they're faster. They're the fast weapon. The two-handed ones are slow. So apparently having a two-handed crossbow takes longer to load, I guess because there's more string or something. But the two one-handed, yeah, sure, it would be a smaller, you know, so it'd take less time to cock back. But you're still firing them, though, as though they're, like, fucking Uzis. Like, you can do, like, chain shots or you're doing shit like this. And it's like, what the fuck is going on? Who's pulling the bow back?
The back of each crossbow is a hook that you hook it. So you shoot, and then you hook it.
Okay, that'd be pretty fucking cool, but also that's ridiculous. Or you have, like, a hook... Yeah, like a bracer that has a hook on the bottom. I wonder if anybody ever tried doing that. It sounds like a really stupid idea. Because, like, you could do that, sure, but also, wouldn't it just be easier to have one crossbow aim well and get a shot off well that then pierces armor? Crossbows had to be outlawed by the Pope. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah.
The Pope was like, this is unfair.
Yes, it was literally because it was unfair. Around the Renaissance, when like they were first like figured out how to do them, it took a longbowman like 11 years, on average, to like get to the point where, when we're talking about a longbow, it's like 6 feet tall. It's really fucking huge. Or like eight. Sometimes you had that like people standing up on pedestals to fire from, because like the bows would go below the ground. Yeah, anyway, so yeah, longbows, they were extremely, extremely powerful, but really difficult to use and took years to figure out trajectories and things, even if you're looking at, like, fronts from far away that are just moving
and
in.
And you've got to be really sort of accuracy. Strong.
You have to be incredibly strong, because it's not just pulling it back once, which is hard enough. You're pulling it back for hours. Like, battles would last multiple days. And so... Like, and which by that point you're dead and reinforcements have come and somebody else is pulling the longbow back. But crossbows, you could give a crossbow to a new recruit, and within it was something like, it was like 4 months or so, they could hit the same targets that like longbowmen had taken like a decade and a half to get to. And so it was such a point of unfair army, like weaponry and stuff, that the Pope literally said, yeah, crossbows, not part of, I don't know, whatever it was.
Civilized
the,
warfare. You know.
Yeah, I mean, what do they call it? We have the thing we have now. The
Geneva named Convention.
The Geneva Convention. It was like the equivalent of it being against the Geneva Convention. No nukes.
Yeah, no chemical weapons, no crossbows.
Because it's like, yeah, ultimately... a longbowman can fire much faster than a crossbowman, a few, like multiple times per minute. You know, you could probably get off a quick person could probably aim and fire within 5 seconds, whereas a crossbow takes probably closer to like 20 or 30 seconds, depending on how far back you're winding it. Because oftentimes these things literally have cranks.
Well, but if you just have the resources. Later. So first they did the hooks. They had a hook.
They just hooked it. They would just. Oh, that's right. Yeah, use your legs.
Yeah, because the legs are fucking strong.
Yeah. You kick it out and then you just hook it and then you just fire like that.
Yeah, that's why you see crossbows with that little iron like hook at the end. It's because you put your foot in there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Longman, bowman could be much faster, but you could also train and like recruit and train 5 dudes to effectively use crossbows in like literally months. And so all you had to do was produce the thing, which was not easy and required a lot of resources and a lot of know-how. But if you could do that, then whoever's the richer nation with more resources, like, it didn't matter how good the soldiers were. And the Pope didn't like that because, I don't know, war was a, you know, spiritual thing and required, like, valorous people, I guess, or something.
Yeah. I don't know. Couldn't just give a peasant a crossbow and just be like, look, right, learn to shoot the thing and then get back to me.
Yeah, and I have no idea how much that actually did in terms of stopping people from using crossbows. They probably still were just like, what the fuck ever? You're the Pope. We don't care. There's three of you right now anyways, and you all say that you're the Pope and that nobody else is. I don't care. Like, do you know about that?
Yeah, it's like the Spider-Man meme.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's three of them. They're all got big hats.
Yep, exactly. Okay, we really got to start, though. So you said don't get me started on crossbows. We definitely started on crossbows. Oh, yeah,
we got deep in the crossbows.
All right. Medieval weaponry corner is over.
We'll,
because the crossbow we'll started go, in the Renaissance.
We'll do that more later.